We are in the third week of a series that we've entitled, How to Be Rich at What Matters Most. And like I've said, each of the first 2 weeks, I was excited about this, the content of this series, because I think that it has the ability, if we kind of grasp it and hold on to it, to change our life, really. And that's not an overstatement, that I think it can change the way we think about things, which can actually change how we live our life starting even today, and it can have a positive effect on our life. I've been gratified by some of the positive buzz I've heard people talking about some of the things. If you haven't been here the last couple of weeks, you'll probably feel like you're kind of coming into the middle of a movie. And so I would encourage you to go to the website, listen to the first couple of weeks, so you can kind of catch up to where we've been. But for those of you who were here, let's kind of do a little review. The very first week we said that when it came to this whole idea of finances, that there was good news and there was bad news. And the good news was what? The good news is that we are rich. Say it like you mean it, church. The good news is we are rich. That's right. We are rich. We learned that if we make $37,000, we're in the top 4% of all wage earners in the whole world. That's incredible. And if we were fortunate enough to make $48,000, we're in the top 1%, the top 1% of wage earners in the world. That's incredible. God has richly blessed us. In fact, we have been blessed by God with more than we need. We are rich. Along with that richness, we have rich people opportunities, right? We can send our kids to school, and they can play on sports teams, and they can be in the band, right? We have, most of us in our pocket or in our purse, we have more computing power in that little piece of equipment than could fit in this whole room just a generation ago, right? We have rich people opportunities. It's incredible the things that we can do. Of course, as our wealth increases, so does our discretionary time and income, right? And the reality is that when we have extra of something, we tend to waste it, don't we? We've had extra of something, we tend to waste it. Or we tend to assume that everything is for us to consume, right? Our assumption that everything we have is for our consumption, right? And so the more extra time we have and the more extra money we have, we think it's all for us. And so we have rich people opportunities. We can go on vacation, and we can redo our kitchen, and we can do, we can travel. And all those things are fine, except that the richer we get and the more we focus on us, the more likely it is for us to turn our attention from God and from others and only focus on ourselves. And so, as we learned last week, there was good news, and that is we're rich. There was also bad news, and the bad news was what? We are rich. That's right. That's also the bad news, because the being rich comes with a whole passel of side effects, right? And some of those are just kind of minor inconveniences, right? And in fact, we talked about last week that before we complain about stuff, we should just admit and say out loud, okay, I'm going to complain, but this is a rich person problem, all right? And in fact, this week, you've got an assignment, okay? Those of you that are tech savvy, that you're on Twitter, or you're on Facebook, or you're on Instagram, or whatever, I would like you to use this hashtag, rich person problem, all right? Hashtag rich person problem. So whenever you come across one of these situations, like yesterday, Chase and I we went out to lunch together, and we had to wait over 30 minutes to get our food. And we were at Hardee's. And that's the truth, all right? That's a problem, but what? That's a rich person problem, right? Long line at the airport, what is it? It's a rich person problem. Bad cell service, it's a rich person problem. So this week, that's your assignment, okay? Those of you who choose to accept it, use that hashtag, and next week it'll be kind of fun. Seth's going to pull all those things. Now, you know, you can post it to the church Facebook account, or as long as your Twitter feed or Instagram feed is public, then he can sneak in there and grab all that stuff, and we're going to have some fun with it next week. So we'll see what kind of rich person problems we encounter this week, all right? So that's your assignment. You got it? All right. So there are some of those that are just kind of inconveniences, but they're problems, but they're rich person problems. But as we talked about last week, there's some that are even more serious than that, that are some that are more dangerous. In fact, just as a reminder, Jesus said that wealth had serious side effects and dangerous side effects. From a spiritual perspective, Jesus said that our wealth, that our riches, actually was the biggest spiritual deficit that we would have to overcome, the biggest spiritual obstacle that actually stood in the way for us and our relationship with God. He knew that because he knew that money promised things that only God can provide, and that money would be the primary competitor for our heart with God. And again, because it promises things that only God can provide. We talked last week about how when we're kids and we go to the pizza places, you know, and we get all these tickets, you know, like at Chuck E. Cheese, and we think if we just get enough tickets, right, then we'll be able to get that thing that will make us happy. All right, that will make us satisfied, and our trip will be a success. All right, it will be just this wonderful, life-changing thing. And as we get older, we exchange those tickets for these tickets, right? And we think if we just could get enough of these tickets, then we could get what would make us happy. If we could just get enough of these tickets, then we could get what would make us secure. As we learned last week, wealth is so deceitful. It'll lie to you. It'll make you think that that's the case. But really, it's so uncertain. If you've ever lost money, all right, and all of us probably have one time or another lost, we realize that money is uncertain and is deceitful. It lies to us. And Jesus said one of the primary dangers that we have because we are so rich is that because our stack is so big, because we are so rich, that our tendency is that we go from trusting in God to trusting in our stack. We go from putting our trust and our hope in God, but we put our trust and our hope in our stack. And the reason that that's so negative, one, just practically speaking, if we trust in money, something bad's going to happen, right? The stock market's going to crash, the housing bubble, or whatever. Something bad's going to happen. So just from a practical standpoint, putting our trust in money doesn't make sense. But from a spiritual standpoint, it's even more severe, more serious than that, because our whole relationship with God is a trust relationship. It was built and based on trust, right? It's a faith relationship. That's how we join God's family. That's how, to use our analogy from several weeks ago, that's how we go from being in Adam to in Christ. That's how we go from being lost to found, okay? That's how we go to be a part of God's family. It's how we get to heaven, is our faith relationship, our trust relationship with God. And so, if there's anything that comes between or that makes us trust in God less or trust in something else more, then that's a very serious issue indeed. In fact, Jesus said how difficult it is for the rich to enter the kingdom of heaven, because he knew all of these things were true. Now, fortunately, Paul gives us the antidote to all these spiritual side effects that wealth can create. And that's in the verses that we've been looking at. We're going to look at them again. And kind of today, we're going to go from the theoretical. The last couple of weeks, we've kind of been talking about how we think about things, right? We realize that we are rich. And now we're going to see the practical implications. What does that mean? How is that supposed to change our actions? And actually today, this teaching is just for those of you who are believers in Christ. And so, if you're a visitor today, you're just coming in to check things out, the good news is you don't have to listen to any of the rest of this, right? It doesn't apply to you. You can just sit back and relax. You can try it at home if you want to. It's no cost or harm. But these commands are just for us church people, all right? So you can kind of sit back and relax about that. But here is what what Paul says in 1 Timothy verse 6. And after you hear about this, those of you who aren't Christians, you may be glad you're not, all right? And you may say, okay, that's why I'm not, all right? But here's what he says. Here's the antidote to the trouble that wealth can cause in our life. Command those who are rich. And again, that's us. Command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. He says, if you want to know the antidote to all the side effects of wealth, if you want to keep your heart from migrating from God to your stack, right? He first of all says you have to do more. He says, command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds. And so that's going to add to our thought. The last couple of weeks we've been adding to kind of a thought that we've said out loud together, and hopefully it stuck with you. And it began this way. God has blessed me with more than I need, I'm rich. Last week we added, I will not trust in riches, but in him who richly provides. And today we add this, because I have more, I will do more. Okay? Can we say that together? All right? Let's try that all together. God has blessed me with more than I need. I'm rich. I will not trust in riches, but in him who richly provides. Because I have more, I will do more. Right. Paul says that we are to do good. We are to be rich in good deeds. Paul knows he doesn't say that we're supposed to be good or that even we're supposed to do good in the normal way. I mean, all Christians were commanded to do that, right? He said as rich Christians, we are to do gooder, all right? We're to excel in good works. We're to be rich in good works. We're supposed to be, it's one of the characteristics that we're known by. And so, to fill in your blank there on your outline, to counteract the side effects of wealth, truly rich people give routinely. And that's kind of a boring word. I couldn't think of what word to use, all right, to get the idea across. So, true rich people give habitually. They give constantly. Or maybe this one I like better, relentlessly. All right, it's just a normal part of what we do. All right, it's who we are. It's what we do. We give routinely. We give relentlessly because we are rich in good deeds. Paul said we're supposed to be rich in good deeds, and I don't want us to be poor in good deeds. Or I don't even want us to be middle class, right, good deed doers. I don't want us to be rich good deed doers, okay? I want us to be rich in good deeds. Now, of course, anytime we talk about doing good deeds in church, we got to say up front, all right, we are not saved by our good works, right? We are not saved by our good works. We're not talking about salvation. We're not talking about how do you get to heaven, all right? We're not saved by good works. We're saved for good works, all right? Paul says it this way. The same guy, Paul, says it in Ephesians chapter 2 this way. For it is by grace you have been saved through faith. This is not from yourselves. It is the gift of God. Not by works. There you go. Not by works so that no one can boast. For we are God's, we are God's handiwork created in Christ Jesus, what? To do good works, which God prepared in advance for us to do. Did you realize that? God prepared good works in advance for you to do. You have a divine to-do list. Did you know that? If you are a follower of God, if you are a part of His family, you have a divine to-do list. Now, some of you guys probably have honey-do lists, right? And maybe, you know, that on the weekends, you know, you think you're going to lay down and watch football, but really, there's this honey-do list, right? Yeah, you feel your pain, right? Okay, we have this honey, but did you know that we have a God to-do list? God has prepared good works in advance for us to do. That's remarkable. Even more remarkable, God loves you so much that He has given you everything you need to do to get done what's on His to-do list. Right? He has blessed you with everything that you need to get done what He has put on your to-do list. Okay? So God has divinely gifted you to do certain things. All right? And so, you see the person on the side of the road that has the flat tire. Maybe He's gifted you to know how to change a flat tire. And you can say, this one's mine. I can do that. God has blessed me with the ability to know how to change a tire. I can stop and change your tire, right? You know someone's sick, and you think, well, that family could probably use a meal. And you think, I could make a meal. I got this one, right? And we do good routinely because it's just a part of who we are because we are going to be rich in good deeds. We're not going to be poor in good deeds, not even middle class, right? We're going to be rich. We're going to be rich in good deeds. Our deeds should point to God and not to us, is your next fill in the blank there. We're not saved by our good deeds. We're saved for good deeds. And our good deeds should point to God and not to us. Here's what Jesus said about that. He said in Matthew 5, "You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and say, gee, what a good fellow that is. No, that's not what it says, is it? That they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. Jesus said that in some way that when we, as professional good deed doers, as Christians, as we do good for others, that it points to God, that it directs people toward God and they give glory to God. He talked about our light shining for those around us to see, and He wasn't talking about what we said, He was talking about what we did. That our actions, in other words, would speak louder than our words. That our actions might be the only sermon that someone around us might be able to hear. That our actions reflect and point people to the goodness of God. Peter said it even more strongly than that. He said it this way. Live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your what? Your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us. Now think about that for just a minute. All right? That they may glorify God, not now, but on the day he visits us. What is the day when he visits us? Well, that's at the end of the world when Jesus comes back. All right? And who is it that's going to be glorifying God on that day? Only the people that are the church, only the people that have are a follower, only people that are part of his family. So Peter says that because of our good deeds, some people might actually be won to Christ. That some people on that day are going to be celebrating and praising God. Why? Because of what we said? Maybe, but because of what we did that gave evidence of what we said we believed. We are to be professional good deed doers, not because it saves us, but because God has a to-do list for us. And the reality is, if we are poor in good deeds, right, and let's be honest, some of us are, okay, some of us are poor, maybe middle class, all right, what that means is that there's some things on our divine to-do list that just aren't getting done, right? That means things in the world aren't the way God intends them to be because we are not doing what's on our divine to-do list. Because God has called us to be rich in good deeds. Not poor or middle class, but rich in good deeds. And that's why some of you, in a couple, or next week when we take up our offering for the Boys and Girls Club, and we'll talk about that more just in a minute, some of you are going to give generously, and that's going to be great. But some of you are going to do more. Some of you are going to actually do good works, and you're going to say, you know, I could not just give money. I could actually walk down there and help them. A few weeks ago, I was walking through, just taking a tour of the place, because I'd never been there before. And Oscar, the director of the Boys Club, I was talking to him, and he doesn't know anything about our gift, and it's going to be cool. But I just said, hey, besides money, what do you guys need the most of around here? And he just said, you know, what we really need is just people to come out and help with just routine maintenance. We've got leaky faucets and all kinds of things that just we don't have time or the ability to do, but that would really help us. And some of you, because you are going to be rich in good deeds, you're going to say, wait a minute, fix a leaky faucet? I could do that. That one's mine. And you're going to go down there and you're going to have your wrench or whatever you take, because I can't fix a leaky faucet, but whatever it takes to fix a leaky faucet, you're going to show up with it. And you're going to say, hey, Oscar, what can I do to help? And he's going to fall over and faint. And then after you revive him, then he will show you. And you can do that because you think, I can't be with kids. I don't want to lead kids. But I could fix a leaky faucet. I could paint a wall. I could do that. And some of you are going to do that because we're going to be rich in good deeds. How rich are you in good deeds? Are you rich? Are you poor? Are you middle class? We are called to be, if we want to counteract the negative effects of wealth in our life, Paul says to be rich in good deeds, to do good routinely, to do good relentlessly. It's a part of who we are. But there's something else that he said. If we want to truly counteract the effects of wealth in our life, we're not just do good routinely, but he said there was something else. Look at what he says. Command those who are rich, again, that's us, to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to what? Be generous and willing to share. To be generous and willing to share. You ever wondered about that? You probably didn't before 2 weeks ago, but why did God make you rich? Right? Before 2 weeks ago, you didn't think of yourselves as rich, and so you never thought of that question. Maybe you thought, why was I lucky enough to live in America? Okay, maybe you've thought about it that way before. Why did God make us rich? Well, our verses tell us, for one reason, is God richly blessed us with everything for our enjoyment, right? So God actually wants us to enjoy the blessings that he's given us. So that's good news, right? He wants us to enjoy the gifts that he has given us. So he wants to enjoy it. But Paul also says in 2 Corinthians 9, he says, you will be made rich in every way so that you can be generous on every occasion. And through us, your generosity will result in thanksgiving to God. Again, just like our good deeds give glory to God, our generosity points back and gives glory to God. We are made rich so that we can be generous in every way. Paul says if you want to counteract the negative effects of wealth, then be generous and willing to share. Now, a few weeks ago, I asked you to raise your hand. Who was rich? And, you know, nobody raised their hand, right? But now, who's rich? Right, now we all know. But here's the other question. If I just say, who's generous? We all raise our hand, don't we? Because we all like to think of ourselves as generous. Right? We all like to think that, yeah, I'm generous. And so when it says to be generous, we check that off. Some of us might not be as generous as we think. Because if we're an average rich person in America, we're not as generous as we think. And so, and we'll add to, and this will be a little scary for some of you, add to our key thought for the day, okay? And is this: God has blessed me with more than I need. I'm rich. I will not trust in riches, but in Him who richly provides. Here's the hard part. Because I have more, I will do more, and I will give more. All right? Excellent. Let's say it all together. All right? And I know it's a little hard, and you can say the last one a little quieter if you want to. All right? But here, ready to go. God has blessed me with more than I need. I'm rich. I will not trust in riches, but in Him who richly provides. Because I have more, I will do more and give more. I heard you say it. All right. All right. And some, you said it out loud, and somebody next to you did as well. All right. Because I have more, I will do more and give more. The reality is, most people, if we're the average person, the average rich person is not very good at it. The statistics say that the more we make, the less we give as a percentage basis. Did you know that? It seems counterintuitive, but that's the way it is. The more that we make, the less that we give as a percentage basis. And most of us, most Americans, that is, give spontaneously. All right. That is, they see a need, right? They hear there's a disaster, there's a hurricane, there's an earthquake, there's, you know, a feed the children commercial or whatever. It touches your heart. You give. All right. And if the number's big, then you feel generous. All right. But at the end of the year, when you add it all up, you are average, right? Because you've given the average amount that people give. And so if we're not going to just think of ourselves as generous, but truly be generous, if we truly want to counteract the side effects of wealth in our life, then to fill in your blank there, truly rich people give strategically. Truly rich people give strategically. Here's how Paul says it. In 2 Corinthians 9, each of you should give what you have decided in your heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. Give strategically. It means you've thought about it. You've prayed about it. You might have even talked to your spouse about it. That's weird. Talk to your spouse about money. Yeah, there's a novel concept. You've thought about it. You've prayed about it. You've decided what to give. I love the way Isaiah said it in the New Living Translation, Isaiah 32. But generous people plan to do what is generous. I love that. Generous people plan to do what is generous. All right. So if we're going to be rich, if we're going to counteract the negative effects of wealth in our life, right, to keep our heart from migrating from God to our stack, all right, we give strategically. We think about it. All right. Think about, we're coming up on Christmas, right? The wise man. Think about the wise man. You know, the white guy, the African guy, the Asian guy. You know, they're under your tree too, right? I know. What'd they bring? They brought gold and frankincense and myrrh, right? They had thought about it, right? That was a strategic gift. They thought, what can we give? What would be appropriate for a king? And they thought about it. They didn't like get there and then like run back to Walgreens and get a pillow pet. Cause, you know, it's like, we forgot to bring something. Did you bring something? I didn't bring anything. Let's go. And they, you know, they didn't do that. They thought ahead of time, right? They planned strategically. They thought about it, what they were going to give. And if we're going to be rich in what matters most, we too will give strategically. All right. Well, how do you give strategically? How do you give in such a way to ensure that you're generous, not just that you think that you are? Okay. I would suggest that we become 3P givers. All right. 3P givers. This is not original to me. I've heard other preachers talk about this. 3P givers. First P is priority. All right. A priority giver means you get something, you give something. Right. You just train yourself that because I know the deceitfulness of riches, I know that the more I have, the more I'm likely I am to trust in my pile of money. So anytime I get anything, I'm going to give some back, right? I give, I get. I give, I get. It takes faith to be a priority giver, right? To give first. It doesn't really take much faith to give what's left, right? But it takes faith to give what's first. So if you want to give strategically to ensure that you're generous, give as a priority giver. The second P is percentage. Be a percentage giver. Okay? Because the reality is, in God's economy, percentages are what matters. percentage. He's not so impressed with amounts. He's more concerned with percentages. And again, as I said, in America at least, rich people give, they might give higher amounts, but they give smaller percentages, right, than do poor people. But the reality is rich people should give both larger sums and larger percentages. Okay? Here's what Jesus said about this. You've probably heard this story before. This, you might not have thought about it in this context. Jesus said this, or this is a story about Jesus. He said, Jesus sat down near the collection box in the temple and watched as the crowds dropped in their money. Now think about that. Right? Jesus is the one passing the collection plate. Or he's standing there watching what you put in. All right? That's kind of different, right? Makes you think about things a little different. In the temple, they didn't pass the offering plate. There was just a box out front. And anybody that wanted to could kind of hang out there and see who was given what. Right? In fact, people would do that. And on this day, Jesus was doing that. And he was watching what people put in the box. All right? That's an interesting thought just in and of itself. Then it goes on. Many rich people put in what? Large amounts. Then a poor widow came and dropped in two small coins. Jesus called his disciples to him and said, I tell you the truth, this poor widow has given, what? More. This poor widow has given more than all the others who are making contributions. For they gave a tiny part of their surplus, but she, poor as she is, has given everything she had to live on. In God's economy, percentage, not amount, matters. At first blush, you might think, oh, this is just a nice story. Jesus is being nice to a little old lady, and everybody likes to be nice to little old ladies, and so this is a nice story. But really, it's teaching the bigger point that to God, amounts aren't nearly as important as percentages. He said that she gave more. In God's economy, she actually gave more than those who were putting in much larger amounts. And so, if that's the case, if percentages matter, here's just some practical nuts and bolts things. And this is, at least the first couple of them, can apply to anybody, all right, whether you are a Christian or not, or if you just wandered in the door today. These first two apply. The third one is kind of just, again, for us church people. But if you want to kind of get a handle on this part of your life, the first thing, choose a percentage to live on. Choose a percentage to live on. Now, the reality is you already live on a percentage, right? You just don't know what it is. Right? Some of you live on 100%. Right? You just spend, it comes in, it goes out, right? Everything you spend. Some of you are such above average spenders that you actually live on a higher percent than what you make, right? Some of you excel in the art of consuming, all right? And you but that's not what we're supposed to excel in, right? But we all live on a percent, right? We just don't know what that percent is. And so, if you want to be good at being rich, pick a percent and live on it. All right? So pick a percent and live. This will give you this magic thing called margin, right? Assuming that your percent you pick is less than 100. Okay, and so I should have said that. Pick a percent less than 100 to live on, okay? This will give you a magic thing called margin, and margin is what allows you to feel rich. Even if you don't feel rich, at least you don't feel poor. You don't feel strapped. You don't feel stressed. You don't feel pressure, all right? Because you have chosen to live under your means, and so there's margin, all right? And so the next thing then, so we pick a percent to live on, then pick a percent to save, right? Pick a percent to save. Put some back for a rainy day, okay? Of that margin, put some of it back. It's Dave Ramsey's financial piece. That's his very first baby step, right? Is to make a contingency fund, right? So you put a little back in savings so that if something comes up, you're not stressed and strapped and strained. You have a little extra, okay? Because you put a percentage back, okay? The third one then is to choose a percent to give away. If you really want to counteract the negative effects of wealth in your life, choose a percent to give away. How much? Well, it just depends on how badly you want to counteract those effects, right? And here's a question for you. How many of you would like to be below average? Let's see your hands. Anybody out there like to be below average? All right, well here is it was hard to kind of get the exact numbers on this, but the best I can tell, in Indiana, the average person gives 45% of their income to charity. All right? 45%, the average person in Indiana.
That's taxes.
It's way more than that in taxes. 45% in Indiana, the average... 425. Now, it's all coming clear to me now. I'm thinking... 4 to 5%, and everybody is like, what? I'm looking. It's like, I didn't have a pause for crowd noise at that part here in the sermon. I didn't know what it was about there. 4-2, I talked too fast. 4-2-5%. Oh. The average person in Indiana gives 4-2-5%. So, nobody wants to be below average, right? So at least start there, okay? At least start there. And do it intentionally, right? Do it strategically. Think about it. Pray about it. Most people, that average person who gives 4-2-5%, they don't do it on purpose. They do it by accident. They find out at when they do their taxes how much it was that they gave. And they look, oh, I gave 4%. All right? We're going to be rich. We're going to be rich in good deeds. We're going to, because we have more, we're going to do more and give more. And so as we pick what percent to give away, at least start there. At least start at 4 or 5%. Of course, at church, we talk a lot about the tithe, okay, or 10%, all right? And some of you went, you know, and swallowed hard, all right? But some of you have, you know, tried it and know that you actually can live through it, and it's, you know, it's able to be done. But, you know, Malachi talks about that, about bringing the whole tithe in, and test me in this, and, you know, God says, this is the only time God says to test him, all right? And we'll talk about more about that some other time. But today, I just wanted you to pick a percent, all right? And don't be below average, you know, at least pick, you know, 4 or 5% or something and be average, all right? We want to be above average, but at least be average. If you did go all the way to tithing, or even just picking any percentage if you've never given as a percentage before, it increases your faith in God. You'd be surprised how many times that I've talked to people, like in my small group or in just other situations, and they've said, you know, I never gave as a percent before, but I went ahead and did it. And you know, God really blessed us. And a lot of times it's a financial blessing. Now, that's not a promise, and God doesn't say, if you give me money, I'll give you money. Okay, it's not like that. But God's faithful, and you'd be surprised at how often it actually does work like that. But giving first to God increases our faith in Him. Now, that whole concept of percentage giving, and you know, when maybe you taught your kids this, you know, you give them 10 dimes and you say, okay, here's 10 dimes. So you give one dime to church and you get the other 9 dimes. And to a kid, that seems cool because before he had no dimes and now he has 9 dimes, right? And really it's the same thing for God. He gives us, and before we had nothing and he gives us. But, and so when we have 10 dimes, that's one thing. We have $10. Okay, I give $1. I have $100. Okay, give $10. But then we get $1,000 and we give $100, and then we make $50,000, and then that's harder, right? Because the numbers get big. And so, you know, if you were able to give a dime out of the 10 dimes, but are struggling with the 10% out of the 50 or 60 or 70 or 80,000, I, as your preacher, will just pray that God reduces your income to a level that you're comfortable giving 10% to Him. All right, I can do that for you. Just come to me, and then I'll pray for you in that way. Pick a percent, all right? Pick a percent. Honor God with your finances, and He will honor you in that way, okay? Some of you could do that easily. Some of you could give 10% so easily, all right, but you don't, because you're a below-average giver. And Paul says, if you want to really counteract the negative effects of wealth in your life, okay, we're going to be above-average givers. Because we have more, we are going to do more, and we're going to give more. The final P kind of goes along with it, is progressive, all right? Be a progressive giver. In other words, start somewhere, but don't stop there, all right? Start at 4%, next year give 5%, next year give 6%, next year give 7%. Even if you're a tither, I would encourage you to think about increasing it, and here's why, all right? Think about this. You're a new married couple, right? You're making $30,000. You've said, I don't know how in the world we're going to do it, but we're going to honor God. We're going to give Him a tithe. We're going to give Him $3,000. How much money is $3,000 to somebody making $30,000? A lot. All right? That is a whole lot of money. How likely is that couple going to put their faith and trust in that remaining $27,000? All right? Not very likely, right? Because that's not enough, right? That's not enough stack. That's not enough for them to think, I'm going to trust that. No, they've given a big chunk to God. They're going to be trusting God with that. But now, that same couple, you know, they are married and their kids graduate and they're, you know, out of college, and now the couple's making $70,000 or $80,000 or $100,000 or whatever, and now they're still giving 10%, which out of $100,000, that's $10,000. That's a lot. That's pretty good, right? But how likely is that same couple with no expenses and to speak of, and now they've got $90,000, how likely is that $90,000 to call to them? That it can provide for them happiness, that it can provide for them security, right? As our stack grows, our giving needs to grow as well. It needs to be progressive because the effects, the negative effects of wealth sneak in there, right? The bigger that our stack gets. So I would encourage you to be progressive. I told you, for you non-Christians, you're glad this stuff doesn't apply to you, all right? And I told you that you're glad you got a pass for today. You might be thinking, but in order to do that, I'd have to totally rearrange my life. I'd have to totally rearrange my priorities. Is that what you're saying? Yes. All right? Just so we're clear, all right? That's exactly. Oh, but only if you want to counteract the negative effects of wealth in your life. Only if you want to ensure that your trust doesn't migrate from God to your stack. Because again, Jesus said, it is very difficult for the rich to enter the kingdom of heaven. Now, at this point, I know some of you are thinking, there they go again. The church is always talking about money. I knew it was going to get to that at some point. That's all they ever do is talk about money. I'm never going to that church again. All right, they just talk about money. All right, they just want my money. Right? Okay, reality check. All right, Starbucks just wants your money. Okay? But you still go and give them $6 for a cup of coffee. All right? Walmart just wants your money. All right. That's why they're in. OK, we don't have a problem with giving money to where what we like. All right. And to where our heart is and the things that we value. All right. So first of all, it was just that. All right. But second of all, I don't want your money. All right. If you doubt my motives, if you doubt this church's motives in any way. All right. Don't give a penny here. In fact, up here on this table, I have pieces of paper with the names and addresses of three other local churches. Okay? If you doubt my, me or what I want for you, come and get one of these. Give money to somebody else. All right? Because I don't want your money. I want your heart. I want you to be free from the debilitating effects of riches in your life. I don't want you to be one of those people that Jesus said it's very difficult for the rich people to get to heaven. Right? I don't want you to be one of those people that get squeezed out because your money has a hold on you. Right? I want you to be free from that. I want you to live in freedom. I want you to have money in the bank and peace in your heart. Right? I want you to have peace and God's blessing because you have not trusted in riches but in Him who richly provides. So come and get one of those papers if you doubt that. It's not that the church wants your money. We want you to be free from all of that stuff. All right? So we've got that. Because I have more, I will do more and give more. God has blessed us, church, what? With more than we need. We are rich. We're not going to trust in riches. We're going to trust in the one that richly provided those riches. And because we have more, we're going to do more and give more. I want to give you an update and just say it was cool. We were supposed to give 250 cans of pork and beans. I've been talking a lot about pork and beans, right? We were supposed to give 250 cans of pork and beans, but because we're rich, we did more. We gave, at last count, like 430, and there were still some more coming in there, all right? So that's great, all right? We didn't give average. We weren't average 250 can people. We gave more, right? We're 430. That's a lot more. All right. And next week when we give our special offering to the Boys Club, it's going to be incredible. Right. Because some of you are going to give more wildly than you ever thought that you could just because you realize how rich you are for the very first time. And you don't want that richness to take your eyes off of God and to be controlled by your stack. Some of you are going to adopt more kids in Angel Tree this year. Some of you are going to take that bulletin insert and give lots of boxes to Operation Christmas Child. Because we have more, we're going to do more, and we're going to give more. Here's how Paul said it. Command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant nor to put their hope in riches, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our own enjoyment. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. And that's what I want for you, the life that is truly life. Just imagine if we just did this part right. If we just did this part right. People in the community would say, I don't necessarily believe everything that they say. But those are the do-goodness people I've ever seen. Those are the most helpful people I've ever seen. Those are the most generous group of people I have ever seen. Imagine what it would be like if the church in this community and in this world would be known not for what we were against, but as the best do-gooding, generous people on the planet. Wouldn't that be incredible? Imagine what would happen if we just got this part right, to realize that God has blessed us with more than we need. We're rich. We're not going to trust in those riches. We're going to trust in the one who provided those riches. And because we have more, we're going to do more and we're going to give more.